Hey guys, welcome back to the studio. Today we have Matt Espew, a fitness and health and wellness entrepreneur, motivational speaker, author, and philanthropist. Welcome to the studio, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike.
Of course. Hey, so we have Bryce Henson in common, who is the CEO of Fit Body Bootcamp. Also, we have Bedros Koulian in common, who is the founder of Fit Body Bootcamp. And you are actually a franchise owner of a Fit Body Bootcamp over there in Rhode Island, isn't that right?
That's correct. Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah. Hey, so talk a little bit about your journey into the fitness, health, and wellness space.
Okay, well, I started working out at 19 years old. And, you know, I got a little bit of an addictive personality. So I was smoking cigarettes at the time. I was kind of a partier, metalhead, long hair, skinny, you know, rock star looking dude. And I remember my buddy coming up to me and saying, hey, you look a little skinny. Maybe you should start working out. So I started working out. I just loved the feeling. And, you know, at 19 years old, I just went all in. And I remember one day walking out of the gym and lighting up a cigarette. And I'm saying to myself, like, what am I doing? This is kind of counterintuitive here. So I crumbled up the pack of cigarettes. I flipped it on the ground and I never went back to smoking cigarettes. So fast forward a few years after that, I'm in a big box gym and, you know, I'm looking around and seeing these guys walking around like writing notes while they're working out with people. I'm like, well, what are these guys doing? They're like, oh, they're personal trainers. I'm like, you can get paid to show people how to work out. I mean, I just thought that it was just like kind of a meathead thing that any moron could work out. Right.
Yeah. So yeah.
I was the smartest bulb on the porch. Right. So, so I said, oh, let me look into becoming a certified personal trainer. I looked into it. I found a certification, but unfortunately I was also doing some kind of unsavory things. During that time I was, you know, I got involved when I was in this big box gym. It was a big steroid gym. It was an old school world gym back in the day. And, you know, again, my addictive personality and my criminal mind. And I always seemed to go the wrong direction and follow the wrong people. So I was involved in dealing steroids. I was dealing weed. I was doing all kinds of crazy things while I was working out at this gym. And then I noticed the personal trainers and I said, all right, well, maybe that would be a good, you know, good thing for me to do to kind of steer me in the right direction, right? But in the interim, I got into a little bit of trouble. I got caught and I ended up serving a couple of years in prison. So while I was in jail, I was actually training inmates and, you know, I was in a position where I could lift weights and, you know, unfortunately the food wasn't so good. So I got a little flabby, but I was still big and solid, right? I wasn't, you know, I was like 230 pounds at the time when I went in and I was teaching, you know, inmates how to work out, showing them the best exercises to do. So while I was there, I had a lot of time to reflect and I decided that I was not going to continue this path, that I was just going to get out, fly straight, get my personal training certification along with my real estate license certification. So while I was in the can, I read a lot. And when I got out a few years later, I went full force into personal training. So now here I am. You know, you go away for a couple of years, you think I was making a lot of money at the time, but when you average that out, how much money you lose with hiring a lawyer and paying back, you know, your suppliers and all this stuff, that when I got out, I really had no money and I was kind of broke. I was working for my dad, who's a florist. I was on an ankle bracelet, a home confinement thing, and I built the gym in our basement because I couldn't leave, you know, a couple hundred yards from the house unless I had asked for permission. So, and, you know, it was not recommended I go back to the gym. That kind of got me into trouble in the first place by my parole officer. So he's like, you know, try to find another gym or work out at home. So I built the gym at home. I studied for my personal training certification, and I passed it on the second time. I went to MIT, which is a Massachusetts Institute of Technology, you know, and I kind of, you know, I tried to rely on my ability and luck to pass it the first time. And we know that sometimes luck doesn't always fall in your favor. That's not a good plan. So I studied a little bit harder the second time and I you know, received my ACE certification. So that's kind of the backstory. I worked at a big box gym for about, you know, 20 years. I'm dating myself. I'm 56 years old right now. And I started this, you know, this journey. You know, I got out of the can. I was in my early 20s. I worked for Gold's Gym for a while. And then I just kind of reached the point of, there was a few ups and downs with the real estate market. I had gotten into real estate at the same time and, you know, kind of hit rock bottom when the real estate market collapsed. And I was still personal training part-time. I was doing some construction work part-time because I flipped houses and I had a good background in construction. And then that's when I decided that I need to figure something else out because I wasn't making it at that time. And I had always talked about, oh, I could open up a gym. And I didn't really want to do something on the scale of a Gold's Gym that I was working at. I was currently working at because I knew that it was hundreds of thousands of dollars and I didn't have that kind of backing, right? And I wasn't as resourceful as I am now. So I probably could have, I had some very wealthy clientele at the time that I was training. I could have probably utilized my resources, but I always wanted to do things on my own and not get business partners or not ask for help. So I flew out to California in 2014 trying to find my way. And I said, you know what, I'm either going to find a cool thing to do and just plant my seed in California, or I'm going to find a great idea and bring it back to Providence, Rhode Island. So I went to the Fitness Business Summit, which was held by Bedros Koulian. And what attracted me to that particular conference was that Randy Couture, I don't know, but going back in the day when MMA first started, it was Ken Shamrock, Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, like all these, you know, real hardcore guys. Yeah. I really liked him. I was really following MMA. I don't even know 5 MMA fighters right now, but back in the day, I knew them all, right? So I said, let me go listen to Randy. This Bezos guy, he looks pretty cool. I've seen some of his videos. And I went, I didn't even realize that like Fit Body Bootcamp was what I was looking for, right? Yeah. So it was a business kind of in a box. It had guardrails. It had a plan. It had a system. And back then it was only $10,000 to get in. It was like a $2,000 expression of interest deposit on my credit card. And this was in March of 2014. By June of 2014, I had my lease signed, and by September of 2014, I had my doors open. So it was a pretty quick turnaround. So that's kind of my backstory as to how I got into Fit Body Bootcamp. And Bryce Henson at the time was an owner a couple of years into it more than me. And we kind of, you know, we brushed shoulders at events and conferences, and we always developed a, you know, sort of friendship, not as deep as we are now, but we were always very cordial to each other. And I always had, you know, a lot of respect for Bryce because he had multiple locations. So so that's where the start happened.
Well, I got to commend you on the turnaround, because as we mentioned, as we got talking off camera before we started rolling here, I mentioned, you know, my brother just hadn't managed to kind of escape the system, so to speak. He went in to do some time in prison in his early 20s when he was just 20, 21 years old. And he's 53 now. And I remember just kind of him going in for, I want to say it was the 5 years he was in there. After he got out, he came out jacked. So he was always in like same, come up around the same time you did, him and all of his buddies. I remember being a little kid, all those guys worked out at Gold's. All those guys were huge and jacked. And him and my other brother, they were just 10 months apart in age. So they grew up like twins. They had a, you know, a pretty, pretty tight network. And I remember him coming out, and it's hard. The you know, society is not set up to support people coming out. You know, when you go in and you do time, it's, things aren't necessarily working in your favor, and then people just end up finding their way back in. So I have to commend you, you know, for, you know, formulating a plan, sticking to it, and making a success out of everything. Because, you know, unfortunately, like I said, I have such love for my brother, but he hasn't been able to turn it around like that. And I know for so many, they've not been able to turn it around. It's so hard within the system. It's just, with things not working in your favor like that, you get out, and a lot of people turn to the hustle because they don't know how else to, you know, make money when you don't, when you get out and you don't have any, you don't have the resources, and then you're not able to drive, and then you're wearing an ankle monitor. And you know what I mean? Even if, even those that sometimes have the most supportive network around them still can't make it work. So yeah, congratulations. Well,
can I comment on that? A couple of different things, right? So number one, the prison system isn't to rehabilitate you. Yes. It teaches you how to be a better criminal, right? So, and what flipped the switch for me was, you know, hey, I was out before I went to prison. I mean, I had pockets full of money. I had, you know, everything. I was out clubbing. I was, you know, working out. I was jacked up, and, you know, everything was like going in my favor. I mean, I like, again, I had money that was like throwaway money. It, you know, I'd run out of money on a Friday night. I'd go home. I'd just reach into my drawer and just grab a handful. I wouldn't even count it, just stuff it in my pocket. So once I went in and lost my freedom, that was like a wow. That was like when I saw that, you know, and again, the prison isn't full of bad people. It's full of people that have made bad decisions. So not everybody in there is bad, but there are some people in there that are just like, they have that victim mindset and like, oh, the system screwed me. And this is like, no, you really kind of screwed yourself. And yeah, like, hindsight is 2020, right? So when I was in there, of course, I hated cops and I hated the guards, and like, they were all out against us. And, you know, but we were criminals, right? The truth is, I was breaking the law and I was doing the wrong thing. So I read a lot when I was in there, and I realized that like, this wasn't the life for me. Like I, you know, in order to break that cycle, you got to, you know, again, I eventually did go back to that gym a little bit and work out after, but when I initially got out, I didn't associate with anybody from my past that I had associated with. I mean, I was rolling with gangsters and you know, different levels. You know, Rhode Island's a big mob town and all that, but I wasn't like in the inner circle, but I was hanging around with the outskirts, right? So I knew enough people where, you know, when I got out, I had, you know, my dad supported me. He was behind me the whole time. Like he was devastated almost as bad as I was for being away. So when I got out, I worked for him. He had a friend that worked in a drug rehab company that got me a job, you know, working for, you know, just kind of, you know, cleaning the place. And so I always tried to surround myself in a more positive environment because I knew I never wanted to go back there. And it's very, very tough. You got to really walk on eggshells because I technically had a 20-year sentence and it was 16 suspended. It was a tie. You know, I got caught with a lot of weight. Right. So it was, I had to make a plea agreement. So it was a 20-year sentence with 4 years to serve. And because I was kind of a model inmate and, you know, I had a job and I just, you know, the guards knew who I was. They knew some people I knew. So nobody messed with me in there. Right. Even the inmates, like I was 230 pounds. Nobody's going to test you when you're that size. You know what I mean? They think they can, but nobody wants to take the first shot, you know?
Yep.
So in any event, I had a clean record. I had no time in segregation or solitary, whatever they call it. And when I got out, I just said, you know, like, this is it. Like I unplugged I had a black box, a cable box where I used to steal cable and get free cable, the scrambler. I said, you know, I'm not even going to do that. Like I don't want to do anything illegal. That's going to, cause once you are on probation, you could, you know, jaywalk and they could throw you back in. So,
yeah.
So the message to people that have been in the can that are out that have a suspended sentence or have time hanging, you got to fly straight. You got to kind of disassociate yourself with any kind of criminal, thought process. You know, I always have a criminal mind. Don't get me wrong. Like when I see things, I'm like, oh man, if I was still a criminal, I mean, I'd roll that guy in a second. Right. But you know, I don't do it. I still, you know, it's embedded in me, you know, from the way I grew up and stuff. But, with that being said, it's like, you really gotta, you know, set the tone and you really gotta have your mind made up that I am not going back here, you know? And guys, like I'd be eating with them and they'd be like, oh, we put butter on our oatmeal. I'm like, butter? Oh, you never been in the joint before? No. And I never plan on being back here. I've seen guys in my 10 months of, I was in intake because I was held without bail, you know, because I was part of an enterprise and they, you know, knew I was a flight risk and, you know, whatever the case that they held me. I see guys come in, they work out, they get healthy and they go back on the streets and they come back in. And like, I've seen that happen like 6 or 7 times. And I'm like,
yeah.
Dude, like, what were you thinking? He's like, well, you know, they want me to be on home confinement. I can't deal with this home confinement. I'm like, what do you mean? You'd rather be here than be in your own home? Like,
there it is.
There's a little temptation out there. Like, you can't overcome that temptation and stay in the house. You're going to be out with your homies on the street and, you know, getting back into trouble again. Like, they break the policy. And it's just like, I never understood that, you know, because I hated it there. I wasn't like, you know, it's like a country club to some guys, you know.
Well, they don't know how to function when they get out because I've watched it so much. And mm-hmm. and then even a lot of the folks that my brother grew up with, some of them ended up in at the same time. You know what I mean? They would get in, do their time, and then they'd get out and go right back in because they just I think some people, if you're in there for so long. I know kind of when my brother went in his early 20s, you go in for a period of time as a young man like that. And really at that time, it was like everything changed. Like all of a sudden, internet came out while he was in. You know what I mean? Like all these things changed on the outside while he was on the inside. Then you come out and then you have to function and you're trying to figure out you're trying to find your way. It can be confusing for people. And then if you're not in the mindset to seek out help, mentorship, find, you know what I mean? Just find right. Find your thing. I mean, like you have really got to surround yourself with the right people. I mean, like your inner circle is everything.
Yeah, exactly. And then like, you know, to quote a movie, Shawshank Redemption, you know, Morgan Freeman said that you get institutionalized. Like, you know, they let that guy out after all these years. He didn't know how to survive because he was institutionalized. And, you know, like you, I had a brother. He passed away in January 2020. He got the hooks in him when he was really young. He got addicted to crack cocaine and he was in and out of institutions his whole entire life. And, you know, he couldn't function outside of an institution without somebody telling him, get up, go to work, go do this. Cause like, you know, he couldn't hold on the job. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't fly straight. And he was in and out since he was like 14, 15 years old until, He passed away. He would have been, let's see, it was 4 years ago. So he would have been 49. He was 49 when he passed away. So it was just years of abuse to his body and just couldn't fly straight. And always had an excuse why he couldn't get a job. And, you know, everybody was at fault. And it was that whole institutional mindset that, you know, the world's out to get you and you can never get a break. And, you know, it used to frustrate me. I felt bad for him and I tried to be, you know, a role model and influence to him. But, you know, once you get so far gone, like there's only so much you can do.
I can relate so much because it was so frustrating. It used to like, it used to weigh heavily on my heart because my brother is like, he was a model, always a model inmate too. Always the biggest guy, like huge muscles as big as my head. I'll give you the shirt off his back. Nice guy. We were raised by the same parents. We had all the same opportunities, but you know, kind of growing up, I remember from just me being a little guy, he was, you know, he was in rehab by the time he was 15 years old. And that was kind of the downfall. That was the trajectory, you know? And then we had a very strict upbringing. Our father was a major disciplinarian. Like we lived projects. And, he was, it was like that. And so, and very religious, you know, our father. And then my brother got his girlfriend pregnant. And then, you know, my dad pushed him into marriage and, you know, he was just, like I said, he was in rehab by the time he was 15 years old and he was 20 at that time when he got his girlfriend pregnant. And that really, like, you know, crack cocaine, all those things, like that stuff has been already in the mix. You know what I mean? And then you're factoring in, like, now you're a father, now you're married, you're a husband. And, he just, you know, some people are either going to thrive. My parents were teen parents. My parents, when they had my brother, they were 17 years old. They met when they were 16. They've been together since they were 16 years old. And then they became teen parents at 17 and then had 2, 10 months apart, but they thrived. They were great parents. You know what I mean? They were, they gave us all the opportunities and they pulled it out. Their parents kicked them out of the house. And so, you know what I mean? They like the best. And it's interesting because, you know, you take one person's story and compare it to another and everybody has a different outcome. It's not the same for everybody. And it's tough. It's tough to watch that, especially when it's somebody that you love. And I'm sorry to hear about the loss of your brother. Also, you know, I lost our other brother. That was just, you know, a little bit younger than my oldest brother. And he passed away at 27. And, you know, that was hard to process. So
yeah, your story kind of relates to mine and a little bit different though. My parents were 19 and 20 when they had me and, you know, they got divorced and my mother remarried again, had my brother. So he was, you know, technically my half brother, but we grew up, you know, in the same household and stuff like that. But, you know, my parents didn't stay together. So having a two parent household, you'd think would be, you know, more of a structure, but, you know, again, like your family, your brother, you know, again, you know, still went the wrong way, even though he had that structure and that discipline of your dad. And then my brother also had a son, my nephew, Patrick, who's 19 years old now. And, you know, I thought we were all hoping too, like, all right, this is going to change him. This is going to make him fly straight. Now he's got responsibilities, but my mother just ended up coming in and taking over the responsibility. And so I helped out and I was taking my nephew since he was an infant. So I never had kids myself and he was my fulfillment of me not ever having kids. So I got to kind of raise him up until he was old enough to not want to bother with me anymore. Once he came, like, 16, I'm not coming with you anymore. I'm like, okay, well, I still got to, you know, embellish in his development to some degree and just like kind of watch him grow up. So yeah, it's interesting how, you know, similar stories, different outcomes and stuff. So
yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I think about my brothers often and I have to say, like, you know, before drugs and alcohol came into the mix, like it was like the first 10 years of my life are the years that right now at 47 is where I reflect the most these days, because that was like, we had this great sense of family. It was so fun. Like I loved having brothers. We had all the opportunities, but we had, our dad was, you know, our folks were strict disciplinarians and like he would, my father would appreciate the project. We'll touch on the project later.
Yeah.
What I'm referencing here, but you know, like I can appreciate what the project was all about because while my brothers didn't have a positive outcome, they were both at their heart and soul good men. but just lost and caught up in things that unfortunately took over, you know. And I, you know, have my own bouts here and there. I have my heyday, but like for me, nothing ever got a hold of me to the point that I couldn't turn it around.
And I don't know if that's considered luck or will, because I was the same way. I was following that cocaine trail there, and like I was dealing that as well when I was younger, and I was using it as well. I would sell enough that I didn't ever have to spend money on it because I was always cheap. I spent my money on drugs. I dealt enough to overcome the price of it, but I reached a point where people were starting to notice. They're like, "Hey, you're looking a little thin, and you know, what are you doing?" You know, and I, like that was another thing that like I did quit cold turkey. I mean, I dabbled here and there. Like, you know, I haven't in probably over 15 years, maybe more, probably 20 years. You know, haven't done a bump in 20 years, but I'd be afraid right now. I'd be afraid to have a heart attack and get a fentanyl overdose. But, you know, I was lucky. I consider myself lucky because I see a lot of people from my town. I was in a small town of Central Falls, which was labeled the cocaine capital of the world.
Wow.
Because it had a big Colombian, a population, which they just, you know, they it was like that was, you know, home was Colombia, and that's where the coke came from, right? So I feel very fortunate that I was able to kick it without ever having to go into a rehab, without ever having to, hit total rock bottom with it, you know? So again, I don't understand the philosophy behind it. I don't know if it's luck. I don't know if it's like you were born with stronger will than your brothers or my brother or the other people that were around me in my city, but I was able to go through it, take it to a level, but then drop it and stop.
Yeah. I mean, you can get down a rabbit hole, but like I was just having this conversation with someone that I grew up with, and we watched a lot of people that, you know, that we went to high school with just not make it, not turn it around. And I feel so blessed that I was able to just let things go. They were, I guess, more phases for me. I don't know. As I got along further in life and, you know, found my way into my career path, I had started making changes for my life. You know, there was times I would just be able to tell, like, man, you need to dial it back. You're out of control. I need to make some changes. And I would just do it. You know what I mean? Like, I used to smoke cigarettes and drink, like party heavily. And it was like, okay, I just knew when to reel myself back in. I don't know. My body would just tell me. And so I would do it. And then that's when I kind of found my way into fitness and like, and channeling my energy into putting more good in my body than bad. And just kind of, I've talked about it before on my podcast. I talked about it with Bryce when he was on my podcast. 90-day challenges for myself. I don't think I started out at 90 days. I was starting with like 30-day challenges, like go to the gym every day for 30 for 30 days straight. And even if it was just to walk on the treadmill for 20 minutes, I made myself go because I needed to be in the environment to see the equipment, to see the people and get into the routine. And then I would build up from there. And it was like, take on a new habit, drop a bad habit kind of deal for me. And it was like, just one thing led to another. And, you know, slowly but surely, it's hard. It's interesting when, and I'm sure you can relate to this. It's when you're making changes for yourself and you still want to hang around the same people, but you can't do it because they kind of don't want to accept you for making good changes. You know what I mean? It's just it's a messed up situation when you're trying to, see the bigger picture and you're trying to hold on to people that no longer, you know, serve your best interest. You kind of come to those.
Yeah, like you say, birds of a feather flock together, right?
So yes,
on a product of five, right? You like, if you hang around with five millionaires all the time, chances are you're going to want to become a millionaire because you're seeing the lifestyle. And you hang around with five, drug users, chances are it's going to be tough to be that one odd, outlier that doesn't do the drugs, So yeah, I believe that's why I'm part of so many great, positive networks, with the Fit Body group and, part of the mastermind for Fit Body. I follow Todd Durkin, who's a world renowned coach and trainer. And I just, part of his mastermind group. And like my network is all over the country and, part of the world in Canada and different parts of the world. And we all have the kind of the same, mindset and focus is like, to, create impact, inspire fitness, change lives, so we're all on the same projectile. So I want to be the best that I can be around those people and in that industry. I want to be like in the top 5% of every crowd I hang around with, right? So when I was doing bad things, like I wanted to be the biggest dealer in town, right? So, yeah. you know, but now I want to be like the best franchise owner in town, you know? So
I love it. I love the switch too. Cause people ask me that all the time. I'm like, I was really good at making bad decisions back in the day. Like I was committed to the thing and I was going to be the best at it.
I was all in with making bad decisions and being a wise guy. I was all in with that.
Yes, exactly. I knew that we'd have a lot in common just talking to you, briefly, you know, the few times that we've been able to connect. But, you know, what took you down to connecting with these masterminds? Was it just getting involved with that group like Bryce and the Fit Body family, that just led one thing led to another and you just started making connections like that? Like what took you down that path?
Well, mastermind is part of Fit Body Bootcamp, but it's the tip of the spear, as they call it. Right. So it's, I think there's about 50 out of 250 owners that are in the mastermind, right? So don't get me wrong. There are some owners that are not in the mastermind that are absolutely crushing it. But when you're around, you know, again, they call it the elite mastermind, right? Sounds a little pretentious, but the elite mastermind. And we get all the stuff first, right? So I like to see like what's coming out, what's going, you know, what's going to be, you know, launched earlier. And, you know, again, it's just like I said, being around those people that want to take it to that next level. Not that every Fit Body Bootcamp owner doesn't want to succeed, because they all do, but some of them, they don't do the thing. They don't do, like, they don't follow the process, right? I bought a franchise because I didn't know it, you know, enough on my own to, if I opened Matt's Gym back in 2014, guess what? I'd probably be doing construction right now somewhere, right? So, just, you know, you buy a franchise because they put guardrails on for you and they give you a compass, right? That's the two analogies I like. They give you a compass and they put guardrails on the road so that you
can
straight down that path. Where back in the day when we first opened Fit Body Bootcamp, it was the non-franchise franchise, right? So they gave you enough, but you can make your own decisions. You can go forks in the road, you know, one person.
Like a flexible blueprint.
Right. One person would be running a paleo challenge. Somebody else would be running a little black dress. Now everybody's aligned, right? And there's still some owners that want to be rogue and do their own thing. And they're the ones that struggle the most, you know? So the reason why, back to your question, is why I got the mastermind, because I want to be amongst the top, you know, tip of the spear, the elite. And, you know, paying that extra money makes you pay more attention, right? So I've always been in, I think I left the mastermind just a little bit when Bryce first became CEO. They were making some transitions and like I just wanted to see where the franchise was going with him in his leadership role. And you know, I do, like, part of me likes to jump in and be the first, but also part of me likes to say, all right, let's see what happens here, right? So you know, so I make different decisions based on different scenarios, whether I'm going to be the first one to jump in or, you know, the mastermind, like we were the first to jump in on some things and they didn't work. So it's like, damn, like I should have waited. Right. But now I don't mind being second or third to try out a new product or whatever. But that's the reason, you know, to answer your question, why I got involved with the mastermind, because I wanted. And plus, you know, the other reason was when I first bought my business, I, you know, I had the dream to move out to California. I, you know, when I was younger, I was, you know, I didn't have great self-esteem and, you know, I didn't think I could make it out there. My family was here, you know, and I was like, well, you know, I love it out there so much. I want to buy a business that's going to allow me to travel to different conferences, you know, and be out on the West Coast as much as I possibly can. And I know the mastermind, they have a couple of meetings out on the West Coast every year and, you know, they go different places. So I actually wanted, I don't say an excuse, but the ability and the excuse that to travel frequently. And I love to travel. I love getting out of Dodge, you know, so.
I do it too. And that was a big draw for me I went to BK Live year one and I loved it. I had just, everything spoke to me there. All the stars lined up and then he dropped Legacy at that event. And I was like one of the first to sign up with it. I was like, absolutely. And kind of to your point, it's like we do these meetups and you get to fly out to Temecula. And I know that you've probably been out to Black Site a dozen times.
Yeah, a couple times, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to be meeting up in Del Mar here in December. And they're always five stars. BK's team always, you know, just pretty much rolls out the red carpet to give everybody a great experience. You're learning so much and he brings the elite for us to learn from. I think it's great. And then he's part of that, you know, obviously part of that group too. He's so accessible and so is everybody else. And I feel so blessed to get to network with some of these people, including yourself, because I think sharing stories like you're sharing yours and your outcome and everything that you've accomplished is just huge. And there's so much to cover with you. I want to dip into the project. I know a lot of people, hear different things about the project. I remember kind of seeing some footage, but like that was neither here nor there for me because I don't know. I disconnected from news and media like way back in 2016. It was one of those challenges that I gave myself, like, all right, no cable, no TV, whatever, for like 90 days. And that was beautiful. I never went back. I never went back to television like that. I just watched YouTube and I would always search something like leadership and like, you know, different things like that. And, you know, when you start searching that stuff on your phone, like it constantly brings it up. Like whatever
yeah,
you're
searching. I like watching Shock Attack. I just like,
yeah, right.
I'm always getting things on Shock Attack, and slap fighting is the new thing that comes up in my feed all the time.
That's awesome. And that's how I found my way to Bedros and like different influencers and stuff like that. And those became like celebrities to me, the people that I was looking to in leadership, just finding different people that wouldn't be considered like a mainstream celebrity, but I had dialed so much out of that like television realm that, you know, that's kind of how I found my way into that network. But like, I always knew how the media would spin things anyway. So like when I would see footage of the project, I'm like, you know, especially if you've, taken a deep dive into exploring like who Bedros is and what he's about, then you know that's about empowering men. You know what I mean? And making change and being an agent of change. And I was hoping that you'd share a little bit about your experience with the project because you were a year one participant, student of the project.
Very first class, yeah. So let me, number one is Bedros, you know, has been a big influence on, you know, my success too. Like, again, I could be more successful, obviously. Like, you know, it's what you put in is what you get out. But Bedros has been a big influence on me. And I was a fit body owner at the time, and he started this thing. And just like to back up a little bit, my dad was in the Navy. My grandfather was in the Navy. I never went in the military. So that was like one regret I had, because if I would have gone into the military, I'm convinced I might not have gone to jail. Right. But, you know, just both of them have their own, they had their own lessons for me. Right. So like, obviously the military, I believe everybody should go in the military and learn that military style discipline. Right. Like, you know, my dad used to tell me the shoes had to be shined, and I got a little OCD. So like everything's organized, and I think I would have thrived in the military, but I thrived in prison because I was a model inmate, and like my bunk was always clean. Everything was organized. And I, you know, carried like months worth of clothes in a little box. You know what I mean? Like I stored months worth of. So in any event, that's kind of like my personality is like go all in. And, you know, when I redesigned my own apartment, like people would come in and say like, this looks like it's still on display. Like, do you even live here? Right. So I've always been like meticulously organized. And, you know, even as a kid, like at Christmas time, you know, my brother would have his stuff all over. My toys would all be in my room already. Right. So just kind of a little mindset of like where I'm from. Right. So Bedros had left me a voice shot, and he goes, hey, Matt, he goes, I started this program for men. It's a self-development program. I think it would be a great fit for you. We're going to have a Navy SEAL. We're going to have a SWAT team operative. We're going to have a U.S. Marine, myself, and an MMA fighter. And, you know, we're going to run this self-development program. It's going to be a little business, you know, a little, you know, self-development, some physical stuff mixed in. So I was like, okay. And then we told me the price. I was like, well, B, man, I don't have that kind of cash laying around. I was really excited when I got the voice message until he said the price. He said, he goes, yeah, I'll work with you. You know what I mean? He goes, it's the first one. And he actually recruited like six fit body owners. So I wasn't the only fit body owner in the project. So we had no idea what we were getting into. This was class one. There were no sizzle reels. There was no testimonials. There was nothing, absolutely nothing. We went into this totally blind. So in the itinerary, it says, you know, the weather's going to be, you know, 75 California sunny, so dress casual. I mean, I had khaki shorts, I had flip flops in my bag. I was like, okay, this is going to be cool. Like, we're going to be sitting in the classroom. We'll probably get a workout in the morning with this Navy SEAL. Then we'll probably get another workout in the, you know, in the middle of the day with this Navy SEAL and the Marine. And then, you know, probably maybe some more roll call at night, whatever it may be. Like, I had no idea what I was getting into. So when we pulled up, you know, I figured like, hey, Bedros, you know, he's like, he walks out serious, and, you know, the instructors all come out, they grab all our gear. And, you know, black shirt, black shorts in July in California. And they line us up in the parking lot of BK Strength. And, you know, they have a little talking to us. And, you know, Steve, who's the Marine, he was the nut
guy. Steve Eckhart, right?
Yeah, crazy. I mean, you know, he's like, Steve's a cyborg. Like, there's nothing human about Steve. Like, you look at the way he runs his life. Most humans can't live that way, structured that speed, right?
Yes.
That guy's always shredded. He's always, always on his game, right? Steve is amazing, right? So, he comes out, he yells at us for a little bit, and he's like, "All right, get back in the van, go to the hotel. We'll see you guys, later on this afternoon." And then he comes walking into the van with a crumpled up Poland Springs bottle. He goes, "Who the fuck left this, in the parking lot?" And we're all looking at each other like, "Nobody had a bottle. What are you talking about? Get out of the van." And from like 2:30 on a Tuesday until Friday at like noontime, we just got hammered. We didn't leave the compound without logs, but there was obviously some self-development mixed in, right? So I thought that it was going to be some workout sprinkled into some self-development. It was some self-development sprinkled into some torture, right, and abuse, right? So for 75 hours straight, they just hammered us. And I'm sitting in, I was 51 at the time, and I remember saying to myself, like, what did I do this for? Like, I'm 51 years old. I need to be yelled at by these assholes here, right, for 3 days straight. Like, come on. Like, what am I doing? Like, what is this for? You know, when it really clicked as to how impactful the project was when I was going through the airport when it was done. So back during the project, they ranked us all, and the instructors talked to us, and they gave us feedback. And going into the project, I was reactive. I was irrational. I've been like that my whole life. Like you cut me off in traffic, like I'm ready to go. I wouldn't follow anybody down, but like I'm always ready to go. Like I'm reactive, and they gave me that feedback, and they're like, you're not in the joint anymore. You're living like you're in the joint. Like you're living like everybody's out to get you. And, and it taught me teamwork, leadership, and communication, because I was lacking in those areas. You know, even though I own my own gym, I was, as according to John Maxwell's five levels of leadership, I was a positional leader, right? I bought my business, so I'm automatically the leader, right? I had no leadership training. I was not a good team player growing up. It's like, even when I worked for Gold's Gym, I used to teach spin. I was part of the team, but I never answered emails. Like, I wasn't a good team player. I was always about me. And the project, like I said, I was reactive and irrational. And like, I would do things like, I'll smash something just because it didn't work out my way, right? So when they gave me the feedback, Steve said, he goes, you got to break the chains, man. And I said, yeah, but, and he's like, see, you're not even taking feedback now, you asshole. He goes, just shut up and take the feedback. And I was like, okay. And that was a big lesson. I tattooed on my, chains, breaking the chains. I got the cuff that's broken here. And that was all from the project. So when I was walking back through the airport, right, after we graduated, we had the dinner and, get up the next day and got an early flight home. And I was walking through the airport, and it was almost like a teletape, like ticking through my head, and be like, boom, that's why we did that. That's why we did that evolution. That's why we did that evolution. I can use that doing this, right? And like, it didn't really totally register until it was all done and over. Like, I just thought it was like but then I realized each evolution served its purpose. And it was very tactical. Yeah, again, they even told us, they're like, oh, we were just kind of figuring out as we went. Class one, sure, we had nothing to go on, right? But they did an unbelievable job. I mean, it was like a lot of like human psychology mixed in there, and toxic cognitions, and how to Bezos talks about the inner critic and the inner advocate, right? And he takes the inner critic and he says, duct tape that bitch and throw it in the trunk of your car, and let that advocate ride beside you, kill the inner bitch and be a beast with everything you do. So now, like, when I do something, like if I'm doing some hill rocks and I'm like, oh man, I'm tired after the third one, maybe I'll just, that little bitch comes on your shoulder and says, yeah, you already worked out 5 days this week, like you don't need that next one. And then the inner advocate and the beast says, hey man, you showed up, man. You got to do that last run. That's what the project did. It made me go to that point of beyond expectation, like trying to exceed expectations in everything I do, not just doing enough to get by. And that was kind of a pattern for me, like my life. I'd be good at things, but wouldn't try to overexcel. But the project brought that out of me, So I know there was a lot of critics, and it's all people that haven't done the project that are criticizing it online. And I see, all fake Navy SEAL boot camp behind a Walmart and all this other crap but it's, you wouldn't understand it unless you did it, right? You're sitting on the side. I mean, I might've been one of those critics too, saying, look at these clowns over here, but I did the first class and I know exactly what we went through and what we did. So, the other thing too, is I learned over time, is never pass judgment until you actually know what the hell you're judging,
Absolutely. I think so too. And two questions I want to ask you really quick. Well, one thing I wanted to say was my mind works like yours. So oftentimes I'll go through an experience wondering the whole time, like, what the fuck? But then like 24 hours later, ding, ding, ding. Like you said, the ticker tape, it's like everything unfolds. Like a lot of time, I don't know why, just sometimes like I need 24 hours to process some shit before I understand it. All the meaning comes into play. Like I know exactly what you meant when you said it like that. And something else I wanted to ask was, I know most of the classes, not everybody graduates. In that first class, did everybody graduate?
No, two guys that work for HQ were the guys that rang out. They rang the bell, you know. But the thing with that first class is we were all fit body owners and we knew we had to see each other all the time. So like we were not going to quit regardless of how hard it was. Like none of us were going to be the first one. Like I was with six guys that I still see on a regular basis. Well, I still see five of them on a regular basis. So the guy is out, he kind of disconnected from the group a little bit, but and another guy sold his fit body. So, you know, I see like CJ and Stephen Long and a couple of Jake Blanchard. I talked to him quite a bit. Blanchard's not a fit body owner. I apologize for that. But the fit body owners, we like look at each other and like, I'm not going to quit. You're going to quit? No, I'm not going to. Like, we kind of didn't even know we could quit and just get out of it. You know, it was like one of those things where,
well, there's a price ticket on that too. So, like when you ring the bell,
$2,000 at that time, it went up to 18 from class 1 to 20. So it was 10,000 the first go into it. That's expensive.
But you forfeit your dough. Like they're not giving you a refund when you ring the bell.
No.
Right? Yeah.
No, not at all. Like the last class, 23 started and only 13 finished. So 10 rang out, you know?
Oh my God. The last class. Shit.
Yeah. And one more thing that I got out of the project that I think is the most important thing is that I learned how to face adversity. Like, I'm night and day I went through COVID and I owned the gym and I made it through COVID. Right. I mean, was I stressed out? Yeah. Did I see my bank account get down to like $1,600? Yeah, absolutely. I was totally stressed out. I was going through that time, but I never gave up. Right. So it was a lot of people throwing the towel during that time. The other thing is that like when something goes wrong at the gym, whatever, like we'll figure it out. Like my team, all right, the toilet's clogged. All right, get a fucking plunger and plunge the toilet. Like, what do you want me to do? Like, you know, nothing in a gym, nothing. I can't say nothing because there are times we face emergencies where we got to react. But for the most part, like I'm not as reactive, right? I'm not as irrational as I used to be. Like, I just like, I take things with a grain of salt. Like, you know,
I like that for you. I'm so happy that you're in that headspace because we do have a lot in common and I used to wind up a bit. A mentor of mine told me, you know, as I was starting up my business, I faced just a shitload of adversity. And it was, he had told me one day, Mike, everything is fixable. You know, all these things would happen at once. And I'd be like, I would think just everything's going to shit. How am I going to fix this? And it was just like, let's just take it one thing at a time. All of this is fixable. It's not the end of the world. And just the way he said it at the time he said it, it clicked, it resonated. And I took it with me and I'm just like, you know what? And I passed that along to my team as the years have evolved. And this, I'm going on 9 years now. And I just think back to that time and I was just like, wow. And even during COVID, like I had my business is essential. And so I was still operating, but I was not without adversity during that time. Mm-hmm. And I just had to kind of sit back and take it, you know, for what it was and just push through that adversity. It was like,
yeah, and you hit the nail right on the head. Almost every problem is solvable, right? If it, you know, that's one of my core values at work. It's like we're solution focused to solve problems. I tell my team, like, listen, don't come to me with problems unless you've tried several times to come up with a solution, right? And if you still can't, then I'm here for you, right? As your leader, like I'm the last, but I want them to challenge themselves. I want them to figure out ways to solve problems and be solution focused, right? You know, I'm not a big tech guy, right? So when I go in to set up the gym, I coach once in a while, right? Just because I love coaching, right? And I'll set up the TV and like going back, I sent my team to a conference and I was there and I was trying to set up the TV and I couldn't find the workout of the day. And I'm like, how do you guys get this thing to mirror? Like I showed up 30 minutes early just because I knew I was going to have an issue. And yep. I said a little thing and I was just like, hey, if it doesn't work, I'll get a stopwatch like I did back in the day and I'll click my thumb and do this. But every problem is solvable, you know, and it's like, it cracks me up when people are like, oh my God, the holidays. I got to cook. I got to shop. I'm like, really? Like, this is supposed to be a fun time of year. Like, but you don't have to do any of this. Like, you choose to do this, right? So,
yes.
Make a big dinner, right? Make a big dinner, but don't stress out about it. You know, I tell my mother all the time. She's like, I'm going to wrap all these gifts. I'm like, well, why'd you buy all those gifts if it's such a stress to you? Oh, I enjoy doing it. Well, if you enjoy doing it, don't complain about it. Like, it's. you know, this is the type of thing, like people get irrational and reactive and like, you know, panicked over shit that doesn't matter. It just doesn't make any difference, right?
So, yeah. No, I totally get it too. You have a beautiful gym, by the way, because I tuned into your live today. Your gym is amazing. It looks like you got a great team over there. And I also wanted to touch on some of the initiatives that you spoke on during that live. You're always doing something cool, Matt. I really enjoy following your social media. You are a philanthropist, and you are you know, a community builder. I like that about you. And I'd love if you share with the audience some of the initiatives that you've got cooking and some of the things that you've done.
Yeah, well, you know, we'd like to build like that community and that culture. And what makes a community culture community and culture strong is like not just doing it for you, but to give outside the community, right? So we do the Murph Challenge every spring, and you know, all the proceeds go to, you know, the Murph Foundation with fallen veterans, right? When I first did my grand opening, we gave all the money to Operation Stand Down. And you know, I don't do it to say look at me, because most of the biggest donors people don't even know about, right? But we do it just to like kind of I boost up the community and be like, hey, you guys, like, you know, let's help the less fortunate than us. So this time of year, we do a food drive. You know, again, this is a Fit Body sanction type of thing. We do a food drive, which is a food battle. All the Fit Body boot camps, we battle it out. And we also do a Toys for Tots. So what we do is we have a special limited edition T-shirt that we sell to our members. And I take all the proceeds. I usually match, like, so if you know, the shirts cost me $20 and we sell them for, you know, $45 or whatever it may be, I donate the whole proceeds to the Toys for Tots. And then my team and I, we go shopping at Target, we take pictures and we have some fun with that. We go out for lunch after. And then we wrap toys. We have some members get involved and, you know, we have to do a gift wrapping day. And, you know, and then we have Toys for Tots come and pick that up. So we do stuff like that. We just did breast cancer awareness last month, and we donated some money to that chapter.
You did. I saw your initiative for the breast cancer thing. You had the pink hat on, and was that a run? Was it?
What I just
was
did a 5K. Yeah, 5K. Yeah. I was just funny. You know, breast cancer. It would never hit that close to home until like this past year. My mom got diagnosed, and she's, you know, she's in a good place. She caught it early, and you know, 76 years old. So she's going through the, you know, the steps right now. They got it out of her, right? So she's got to, now it's all preventative, right? So thank God that she's in a good place right now, but it still was scary when I heard it, you know, and like, I was like, wow, man, I didn't think this could happen to me and my family. You know, it's just like my grandparents all lived into their, three of them lived into their 80s. And my grandmother just passed away a couple months ago at 100 years old. So it's like, I have longevity in my thing. So when it happened to my mother, and I was like, and like, she's only 76. I'm not ready to let her go yet, you know? And
dude, I can relate. Another like synchronicity here is same. All my grandparents lived to like their 90s or late 80s. And my mom just had a cancer scare. She had a 5-pound mass and had it removed. And again, like they caught it, they removed it. Same kind of scenario as your mom. And my mom's 70. And, you know, it's just, that was scary to me because we just, in our family, we have, you know, we're blessed with some pretty good genes and some longevity there. And so that, I was like, I was thinking the same thing, like that would never happen. And yeah, wow.
We got a lot of similarities here. It's almost kind of freaky right now.
Like, I know, man.
Like, had a conversation with you on this podcast here, and I feel like we're like kindred spirits here. Like,
yes,
we do have a lot of similarities here. So
yeah. Well, God bless her mother. I'm so happy to hear that she's on the upswing from this. Yeah. Yeah, well, those initiatives, man, that sounds great. And I noticed too, like, you have author on your bio too. Like, can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I, when I first opened my business, I had a PR person working for me, and she connected me with a local publication called Go Local Prov, and it's a digital platform. And she said, hey, you know, would you submit an article to this? And I said, yeah, sure, why not? And they liked it. They got a few readers. And, you know, this was going back in 2013, 2014. And so every single week I write a small article on lifestyle, health, fitness, whatever it may be, and submit it, and they publish it. And it's, you know, I think like, oh man, maybe I should be getting paid for this, but it's actually benefiting me because I get my content out there on this platform, and it's, you know, it benefits both of us, right? So it benefits me and it benefits the publication that they don't have to pay me to do it. However, a few years back, I forget when the book was published, but somebody said, hey man, these articles are great. You should, you know, compile them and put them into a book. And I'm like, yeah, you know, they're just sitting there, and you know, they air once a week, and you know, then they just sit in my notes. So I had, you know, my girlfriend's mother is a superintendent teacher. You know, she's gone through the, you know, education system, and she's like, I'll take a look at it and edit it for you. So I compiled like a bunch of like little articles, and you know, the chapters are 1 or 2 pages long, and it's just quick motivational stuff. It's, you know, flipping your switch, your mindset, whatever, how to eat, you know, protein, whatever it may be, that relies. And my column is called Fit for Life, so it's like a lifestyle column. So so I made the book into 3 different sections, like fitness, nutrition, and mindset, and you know, just put it together. It's not a New York Times bestseller or not, but it's a little credibility piece that I, you know, like, hey, I wrote a book, man, like, here it is. And it's, you know, I had some pictures taken and, you know, on the cover, and, you know, put it all together and, you know, self-published a book. And every now and then I get a $6.50 commission that somebody buys it on Amazon. It's called Unleash Your Full Potential by Matt Espute. So shameless plug there.
That's awesome. I'm going to pick up several copies because anytime I have a friend that authors a book, I usually buy a stack and then I gift them out to people that come on the podcast or anybody that's in my inner circle. I picked up, you know, Will Branham. He authored Mission Ready.
Okay.
And so we have that in the studio, and I usually, I think I've given all those copies out, but I'm going to be ordering a stack of yours to have here in the studio. Of course. That's awesome. That's congratulations on that. And, you know, maybe that's some seed planting for the future here, you know?
Well, I have enough articles to do part two. It's just I don't want to jump the gun, but I have a plan in mind. I have a goal I need to achieve before I do a second book, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that for you. I think that that's great. That sounds right up my alley anyway. Like, I like an easy read too.
It's easy, you know, like, very easy.
Yeah, I like that. Like when I got into my self-improvement, when I was making those lifestyle changes for myself and like getting into the gym and just making better choices and all those things, reading was part of that, you know? So it was like, God, sometimes you'd find these books and they were just so intimidating by the size of them. And I was like, and the print is really small. You know what I mean? And when you're first starting out, I would tell myself, just read 1 page a day. And I would get up in the morning and I would just, you know, and then if it's good, if you like, if what you're reading is resonating, it's a page turner. And then it's like 1 page leads to 2 and 2 leads to 3. And the next thing you know, you finish the book and then you're recommending it. And that's good. And so I think that for anybody that's starting out into for self-improvement, this sounds like a good example of that.
I've gotten good feedback on it. You know, I'm not here to ring my own bell, but I've gotten good feedback from it. And it's kind of a funny story where the publisher, Stillwater River Publishing, they had an event at a bookstore, and I said, you know, let me go check it out. And you know, my book was there and on display, and a guy bought the book and he gave it to his wife, and his wife ended up becoming a member of my gym after reading my book. And, you know, a few people have approached me and saying, hey man, that was pretty motivational. It got me off the couch. And, you know, I gifted the book to a guy because he showed up at my gym one day, unannounced, a strange guy I've never met, approaches me in the middle of the parking lot. And of course, with my checkered past, I was like, well, who's this guy? What do you want? He's like, hey man, I just want to thank you. He goes, I read your articles every week. And he goes, I have lost 25 pounds because of you. And I was like, have you ever been in my gym? Like, what do you mean because of me? Like, he goes, no, he goes, your books, he goes, they sit in my head. He goes, you know, some of your chapters. And he goes, you know, I just kind of follow your advice. And he goes, I want to thank you for that. So why don't you come on in? I'll give you a whole book of my articles. And so I give him a book and signed it and stuff like that. So a couple of little kind of fun stories regarding that. Like I said,
well, dude, that's amazing. You never know what, it's good that you're doing all the platforms. So you reach people on social media, you reach people in person at your gym, and then you can connect with people, you know, through your book. And that's a lot. It's, you never know what's going to resonate. I was just having a conversation with someone the other day. It's like, you can hear the same thing from, you know, different people, but maybe it resonates differently when they hear it from Matt or differently from Mike. You know what I mean? Or you're saying, you're delivering the same message at your gym, but maybe one of your attendees, one of your customers, it doesn't resonate when they interact with you in person, but then they get a copy of your book and click, like, whatever the message is, you know, that's good. I like that you've diversified all of your your teaching platforms, your inspirational and platforms?
My next phase, I don't know if this is going to be a question in the end, but like I'm taking a speaker course right now to learn how to public speak a little bit better. So, you know, I'm in the midst of that, a few weeks into that, and, you know, trying to develop a good keynote and something that I can do to create more impact. You know, I've spoken at like small events and, you know, I've talked to, you know, a bunch of high school kids. I used to coach high school football as a strength and conditioning coach for an inner city school that, you know, a lot of kids that didn't have a lot going on, you know, so I wanted to volunteer my time. I was friendly with the head coach and, you know, he let me, you know, do a couple of workouts, and then that morphed into like a 7-year stint of, you know, training these kids. And I've talked at, you know, they call these the Key Spirit Awards, and, you know, one of the administrators in the school department was like, "Hey, would you come talk to the kids?" And like a 10-minute TED talk and stuff like that. So I've done a few little minor speaking gigs, but I definitely want to get on that big stage. And, you know, I just think that, oh, I hope that my story resonates with people. And just, you know, I was always, you know, had this limiting belief that I wasn't educated and, you know, I didn't go to college and that I wasn't, you know, I couldn't create an impact because of that. But that's actually, I think that if you've had a checkered past and you've overcome adversity in your life, I think you can actually create more impact than somebody that's been spoon-fed an education and you know, had an easy life, you know? So, so I feel my, you know, I got a certain goal I want to reach so I can become, it's a credibility goal that I have in my head, you know, for my gym. And, you know, I'm going to hit that, you know, probably this in 2025, I'm going to hit that goal. And that's going to be my springboard to, you know, kind of launching into a new, you know, just, I'll always be a gym owner, but, and, you know, because I love it, but, you know, I'm just trying to go a different avenue so I can reach more people.
Yeah, no, I love that for you. I think that that's a great goal, and you're a valuable human. You have a lot to offer people, and I always say, different strokes for different folks. Not everybody's message is going to resonate from this person or that person. You know, it just depends on the diversity of someone's background. Sometimes means everything, and so different people connect with different individuals. And you know, you definitely inspire me. And you know, public speaking, not my favorite thing. This is a huge push for me to do this podcast. I've been in the mental health field for 27 years, and you know, just one thing led to another for me, and ultimately a lot of adversity and a lot of experiences that happened to me or that I've been through pushed me into wanting to share and then bring good folks like yourself onto the podcast to share. Because, you know, it's that cheesy cliche saying, if you can just help one person, but I believe that. And so, if you've ever been in a dark place and it's like, you're just, you know, one person's message can reach you. That's powerful. It's like, you learn that a lot in the hearing, you know, people sharing their stories through Legacy Tribe or a BK Live event or any of the networks that you mentioned that you're a part of. It's like, that's why people get involved in those, because there's connection, there's community to it. And it's valuable information. It's good for people.
Hey, listen, you're giving me some kudos here, but I want to give you a shout out as well. Like, this was very professionally done. Like, you got a nice operation here, you know, just a forward email that I got after filling out the form and all that. And, you know, just the way to get on and the way you have it set up, man, I want to say awesome job. I've been on a lot of podcasts and, you know, again, like, this is very professionally done. So.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. This is a new, like I said, it's a new venture for me. This is interesting. The public speaking thing for me, you know, I love that you're getting into that. And that's a goal of mine to get better at, and surrounding myself with people like you and Bryce, you know, Bryce and Bedros, all those guys are great public speakers. Mm. I'm rooting for Matt BK Live 2025 up on stage. You got to get that. You got to get on that gig and share your story. But I had, you know, I had, when I started my podcast, I came up
with bring that in my goals. I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, you know, the speaker gig is to, you know, list out where you want to be on stage. And World Conference is one. And, you know, I actually want to do some speaking at like training schools for young kids, but BK Live, that's another goal. So I appreciate that, man.
Yes, sir. BK Live 2025 map. Sorry, put it on the books. Yes. But yeah, no, I come up with the concept for my podcast. It was all, you know, centered around mental health, entrepreneurship, wellness, fitness, everything ties in and ties up. And I had put my studio together, and then I had recorded, I had like a 12 episode contract, and I had recorded a bunch of episodes, and I didn't release anything. I didn't think anything was good enough. I didn't have enough confidence to do it. And then, you know, I just kept banking up the episodes, and I was sitting on them, and I just wasn't ready. And then all of a sudden, all the stars lined up, and Bryce was coming to town because, you know, his brother Barrett owns a Fit Body here in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And he's a big deal. He's always all over the news down here. And Bryce and I were like, we'd message every morning because I'm an early riser. I start my day at 2 and he's an early riser, and they're on California time. And so mm-hmm. we'd message in the morning and stuff. And he was coming to town, and I was like, you should be on my podcast, Bryce. And I still wasn't like to a point where I was releasing anything yet, but I want to, he's pretty inspiring and stuff. So, but he agreed to do it. And then he came in and just all the stars lined up, everything filmed nicely. I only had a couple of slip ups, but everything's, you know, fixable in editing. I had to take a couple deep breaths through that because I would get camera anxiety really bad. And so, so Bryce got to witness a little bit of that. That was, you know, a little bit humiliating, but Bryce isn't the type of person that's going to, you know, poke fun at that. He's going to encourage, and we pushed through that. And then one thing led to another after that for me. And then I felt more comfortable, and then I just kept going from there. And so with that being said, I wanted to be able to share my studio and my platform, and I wanted to be the guinea pig for my studio with my podcast, and then open up the studio for other people. Like, say if you were here and you wanted to, if you were here in Michigan and you wanted to come to the studio and film and have us produce a podcast for you, what that looks like, what, you know, how our sets break down, and what we can do a la carte for people for their vision, for their podcast, if they want to have that, or a YouTube channel even, because it's a great YouTube studio as well. And so, yeah, that was kind of my journey into podcasting. Wasn't necessarily intentional. I just, when you feel a calling to do something, it's like, if you don't pay attention to those signs, things will get really uncomfortable for you. And I experienced that, like, leading up to starting my business. It was like kind of a universal God smack that was like, it's time for you to start a business, sir. Better pay attention. Yeah. So I started paying attention to those signs as the years went by, and the podcast thing, it was speaking to me, and it was like, it's time for you to kind of conquer that fear. Yeah. So I appreciate you being a part of the inner circle. And, you know, I hope one of these days you get to come to Michigan too. I got to get you and Bryce out here at the same time. We'll do a little tournament here in the studio.
Yeah. I just want to say something to, you know, what you just said. And that's like, I think we all go through imposter syndrome, right? Like, are we good enough? You know, hey, listen, I'm not a perfect human being. I still have some vices. I still do some things wrong that you know, that would, you know, I could eliminate from my life. But in any event, you know, we all go through that. Like, are we good enough? Are we good enough? But here's the deal. Like, if we just keep working day to day, taking small steps towards a big goal. And, you know, I got this from Alex Hormozi, that like, preparation alleviates anxiety, right? So the more you're prepared to do something. So like, if, you know, again, I want to do this public speaking, and I'm saying to myself, like, oh, am I ready to get on stage, you know? But I think that between my accent, I think I can entertain people because I got this, like, you know, East Coast accent, and people, when I go out West, everyone's like, where are you from? You know? So, you know, that's kind of entertaining to people. And I just know that when I get that opportunity, I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to be ready to go. Like, it's not going to be, you know, something I'm going to go into half-assed. I'm going to be all in, you know? So when I get on my stage for the first time, I'm going to be uber, you know, and I'm not nervous about standing in front of people. I mean, I'll get in front of a room full of 1,000 people and put you through a workout. But when I want to deliver content and material and deliver value verbally, that's when I get a little like, is this going to resonate? Am I going to keep people's attention? Am I going to say too many times? Like, I've watched plenty of my stuff over and over again. And like, oh, I say the word right too much. Like, right, right. And then like, I say too much. But, you know, going through the speaker school, polishing yourself up, learning to master your craft, which is obviously what you've been doing in the time that you've been doing this, because you're very professional about the way you do it. I don't know where I was going with this, but the bottom line is, we all develop imposter syndrome, but we just gotta do it. We just gotta, you know, fear is, you know, thoughts of the unknown, you know, fear is like anxiety of things that haven't happened yet. Right. So, You just got to do it. You just got to put that foot in, you know, jump in that cold plunge.
That's it right there. That Nike slogan, just do it. Oh, yeah. Man. Like,
no, I didn't mean to plagiarize that. That was just
No, but that's what I used to say to myself all the time. I was like, just do it. Just do it. And then it was funny because that clicked with me. I was like, when I would say that to myself all the time, I was like, oh, Nike was onto something with that. That's so funny. But yeah, you're right. You do. You just kind of have to do it. It's like, it was like getting involved in skydiving for me. I was like, just jump out of the plane and do it.
Yeah, and I haven't done yet, but
you have it. Oh, we're gonna do it. You're gonna come to Michigan, or I'm gonna come out there and we're gonna skydive. That was so eye-opening for me on so many levels. I just did it, and that was like, I always used to tell myself, like, I'd rather skydive than get up on stage and speak publicly. You know what I mean? I'd rather skydive 30 times in a row. It was like, now I'm getting better about that. It was like, oh gosh, you know, what experience is the best teacher, and you just got to continue to do it and be consistent with it. And once you kind of get over it, and then, like you said, you practice and you watch yourself, and you know, you're able to watch the footage back or listen to yourself and correct those things that you see and just get better. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Another lesson from the project was, you know, from Ray Cash. He owes Ray Cash Care, they call him, right? He's a Navy SEAL. And he said that, you know, he goes, you got to program your mind to focus on, not focus, but to just realize that there's three things that could happen. The best case scenario, average case scenario, and worst case scenario. Like, what's the worst case scenario, right? So, you know, he gave an example of, you know, I got this little dinghy of a boat and I need to get to that island, right? Best case scenario, you don't run out of gas, the boat makes it to the island, and you make perfect time, right? You know, average case scenario is like, hey, the boat may conk out halfway and you have to row to the island. Worst case scenario is the motor falls off, you have no oars, you got to get out and you got to swim holding on to the boat, right? So you got to kind of use that as a prerequisite when you're going to do something that scares you. Like, so getting on stage, like, what's the worst case scenario, right? Or maybe trip going up the stairs. But you know what, people, you can, you know, jump up and do a few jumping jacks and do a burpee and you can hide that, you know, like, so what is the worst that can happen? You bumble on a few words, you lose your chain of thought. I've seen like really good speakers lose their chain of thought and be like, I don't know where I was going with that. But anyway, and you can always, you know, like, that's the worst case scenario. Best case scenario, you come out, you nail it. Yeah. Average, like, yeah, whatever, you figure it out, right? So that's another lesson from the project that I want to share with you. Hopefully you can apply that to, you know, next time you do something scary, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. I love it. You are full of good wisdom, sir. And I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today at the Inner Circle. It's been so good chatting with you. I can't wait to do more content with you.
And being here, man, I really am. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. And also too, like, are there any special links that we can share with the audience that that you want to put out here?
I mean, if you live in Providence, you know, Providence Fit Body Bootcamp, you can look us up on all platforms, you know, Prov Fit Body. My own personal stuff, if you want to follow me, is Matt Espute. I make it very simple. I don't come up with catchy code names and stuff like that. So that's pretty much it. You follow me on Go Local Prov every Saturday. I have my Fit for Life column. It's in the lifestyle section, so you can read up that. If you know, you find you're inspired by my articles, then you know, you can keep reading those. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, we'll definitely put up the link for that for the book on Amazon.
I appreciate that.
Yep, of course. And I'll be adding those to my cart as soon as we sign off here. And then also, but people can follow you on Facebook. And do you have an Instagram? I was going to say, yep. Perfect. All right, Matt. Man, thank you so much. I had a great time chatting with you today. I look forward to connecting. I hope you come out to the meetup in Del Mar coming up in December here.
It's a good possibility. It's a good possibility.
No pressure.
I just got to kind of figure some things out here and make sure that I can, you know, break away. I need to go visit another one of my buddies out in Chicago before the holidays. So a few things that I got on the agenda, but that's a good, I just kind of looked at that again yesterday and said, you know what, maybe I should go to this because it's not expensive to go. It's only a couple of days. It's not going to be like a week long event. So that'll be pretty good.
Yeah. Well, even if we don't connect there, I'm sure we'll connect soon. And yeah, looking forward to chatting with you again sometime. You're welcome back anytime at the Inner Circle. We can always StreamYard. So
thank you, man. I appreciate this.
Of course. All right, guys. Again, thank you, Matt Espy, for joining us. And that is a wrap.